Nel 1978, pochi mesi prima della sua prematura scomparsa, il Museum of Contemporary Art di Chicago invitò Gordon Matta Clark a lavorare su uno stretto edificio di 4 piani, che di lì a poco sarebbe stato abbattuto per lasciare spazio ad una nuova ala del museo stesso. Caribbean Orange or Circus è il suo ultimo lavoro, un elaborato cutting che seziona tutti e 4 i piani dell'edificio, sottraendo al suo spazio interno il volume di una sfera. In questa intervista, Judith Russi Kirchner, che all'epoca faceva parte del comitato scientifico del museo, oltre ad evidenziare la genialità e la forza critica e propositiva di Matta Clark, ci racconta come nacque la loro collaborazione, come Gordon effettivamente lavorò e quali furono i limiti e i problemi sorti durante l'allestimento. L'intervista è in inglese.
Gordon was very much of a center of a community. He was one of those charismatic individuals, incredibly kind, very, very funny. You see that in the letters that he writes, with a wonderful open spirit. And all the friends who were around him, I think, appreciated that this was a special moment and that he wasn't at all sort of crazy, but he was more willing to go out on a ledge to explore something that hadn't been explored than perhaps some of the other people in his generation. But even the older artists recognized him. Saul LeWitt knew he was terrific. Vito Acconci respected him. Joseph Kosuth. All of them knew him. And he also was a figure who brought enormous European learning and culture, because he'd been raised partially by Mata, who left him, and then by an American mother. So yes, I think people completely understood that this was a very original thinker. Where it was more difficult in that period was to find institutions who would allow their very sort of foundation to be attacked. And that's why I think Gordon was one of the perhaps more successful artists, whose work still looks fresh, because he didn't just negatively attack something, but he opened it up so that we could see more. And in this exhibition, just to underline what's so exceptional here, is you see the drawings, you see the cut work, you see the films, you see the photographs, you begin to hear the voice of this individual who was able to operate in many different arenas. The work that I was able to curate with Gordon Matta Clark in Chicago in 1978 was called, as you know, the Caribbean Orange Ore Circus. And the title referred to a kind of double activity. The fact that people would come to an area, to a circus, to enjoy a spectacle and to have a great time. And also the idea of cutting an orange in the way that people actually did in the Caribbean. And I tell you this as a beginning, the two aspects of the title of one of the very last works that he did, because when we finished the catalog for the Caribbean Orange, which was a very small artist's book, I took the book to Gordon, who was very ill and died actually the next month. So it was almost his last big project. But it brought together so many of the ideas that I had first become aware of much earlier in New York in 1975, when I had the opportunity to visit with another friend an extraordinary piece called Day's End on a very desolate and frightening, truly frightening pier in New York, which was a kind of urban park where people who didn't have another place to go and relax or didn't have the opportunity to go to the beach would come to the piers and meet other people. So it was a very diverse group. They were people who didn't have employment. There were also a lot of gay people. There were people who were perhaps sotto la legge. So it had a kind of aria clandestina. And I went with this friend of mine, and it was absolutely astonishing to begin to walk along the floor of this space, to see at the end, very far in the distance, an enormous opening that brought the light in, and then a cut also on the bottom of the space over which you had to walk or jump. From that moment on, I knew that this was an artist who was able to capture in a vision using architecture and light and physical experience everything that seemed so critical to the generation of the 70s. And from that experience, when I didn't first meet him, I knew that I would one day want to meet him and work with him. After that, I met a very good friend of Gordon's, a gentleman whose name is Gene Heistein, also an artist and sculptor in New York. And Gene was part of the same group. There was a whole group of terrific artists who were doing very, very extravagant sculptural projects, site-specific. And through Gene Heistein, I met Gordon. And Gordon, at that moment, had just completed a very important commission in Europe, in Antwerp, and was interested, as he says in the interview that I did with him, in the very condition of being abandoned. You know, he was the son of Mata, the great surrealist, who was himself also trained as an architect. So this legacy of architecture lives in Gordon. And then there was also the, I think, attraction in Chicago of the great reputation the city has for its architecture. And Gordon certainly knew about that. He'd studied architecture at Cornell and was very aware of the tradition of the city. Also at that moment in the Museum of Contemporary Art, we had on our board several people who indeed were collectors of surrealist art and knew Gordon's father, knew Mata, who was still alive at the time. So the first invitation came actually with a colleague of mine to be part of a performance. And then once he agreed to be part of the performance, I could say, can you come here and do a piece? Because the occasion was very special. The Museum of Contemporary Art, like this one, was about to build a new addition. And so there was one small piece of the museum, almost like the city slivers in the film, narrow townhouse that was about to be destroyed. And I was able to offer Gordon that four floors in this narrow townhouse to use as the material for Caribbean Orange or the circus. And he came to Chicago and he looked at the space. He had several other ideas. Then he went back to New York and began to make drawings. And then we had the problems because it's very dangerous. And this was one of the few projects that he did where he didn't do it sort of against the law or in secrecy, but did it after my invitation with the support of Board of Trustees. But then we had the building open and you couldn't bring groups through because it was very dangerous. There were five floors that were open. Yes, I think there was. And certainly the spirit of generosity behind the restaurant food and the meals that he made were attempts to build a kind of community at a moment where many young people in the United States felt abandoned by the political situation. I'm the same age as Gordon, had he lived, we would have been exactly the same age. So yes, those were years that I think scarred an entire generation. And possibly as they were here in 1968, allowed a certain, how shall I say, examination of political possibilities for art to take place. On the other hand, Gordon was never a crudely political artist. He was more of a utopian political artist. He always thought that there would be a day with the fake estates where he would be able to give away that property to people who didn't have property. And before he died, he worked on an idea of a garden for young people that would be open. I can't remember the name of it right now, but I'll think of it in a minute. He also had this notion that these spaces were like symbolic openings for people who had no space, who had no home. And he thought in Chicago, when we did the piece Caribbean Orange, that rather than have official museum workers do the piece, what he would do is go out and hire, you know, the disenfranchised people who don't have works. And so we went to an employment agency in a very poor part of Chicago and asked people if they wanted to come and work on a project. So we got a few people, say 5 or 6 men, who said yes. And then they got to the project, and Gordon showed them the saws, and he'd actually drawn on the wall some of the spaces that had to be removed. And those people said, no, thank you. This looks crazy to us. We don't want to be hurt. And not one of them worked. So Gordon also had a spirit, not only of, you know, the sort of political movement that he missed in Europe, he also had this spirit that no one else could match. Everyone else would have been frightened to take advantage of this opportunity to open a space symbolically, politically, experientially, phenomenologically. He could do it all. But that was sort of one of those naive, wonderful moments that he would give work to people. No, they were not interested. It was too frightening. The saws, you could fall. He did it almost by himself. And then some other friends of his came, because we did the performance, some other friends came from Louisiana and helped, and then some artists whom I found. But normal people, normal workers, would not do this work, even if they were unemployed. The point that one makes about the ephemerality of the pieces, the actual pieces, since they lasted only a short time. In Chicago, our piece lasted for 6 weeks, and we devised a way where the security guards actually brought a few people through at a time, say 5 or 6, almost holding their hands and saying, watch out for there and look up there. It was very extraordinary. It was like being in a world of Alice in Wonderland. The point that you make about how he would extend the experience was something that did concern him, but almost as another way of working. Rather than thinking only of the photographs and the films as documents of the sculptural piece, I think for Gordon, and it's shown very beautifully and very forcefully in this exhibition, which I think is one of the most impressionante and very moving exhibitions that I've ever seen of his work, and I know it since 1975. I would say that for Gordon, the films were yet another moment of artistic conceptual activity for him. The photographs as well. In the beginning, he used photographs as a material for frying. So he was always able to move from drawing to architecture to frying to food. He did everything at once. He was very much a kind of magical genius figure, and he believed a lot in the powers of transformation and alchemy. So he could do a cut, as he did in Chicago, but then use the actual plastic of the film, the material, to alter it so that it became those very beautifully colored borders to all the film. So that also achieved the result that he was seeking, but another result. A space of energy. Dan Graham is another artist who admired Gordon tremendously and, as a matter of fact, has written about Gordon's work. He and an architect did a piece about Gordon's work. So I think Dan Graham was both influenced by Gordon, and Gordon perhaps also influenced by some of the spaces that Graham did. I think, yes, that's a good point, that these energized spaces existed, but they did more. They weren't autonomous, even as experiences, but they extended beyond the material fabric, into the street, into the lives of the people who were there. And then I think, you know, you're the best one, as the audience who comes now can tell whether or not they have that experience. And they have a better chance of seeing the fullness, both the physical and the conceptual manifestation, in the way that this exhibition is installed.